Thank you, Jim. My name is Scott, and I'm alcoholic. And thanks to Chuck as well for asking me to come and join you today. And Jim, you didn't need to take any time to tell everybody how wonderful I am. I've got 40 minutes to do that, and I'll use them all. I'm just going to clear this up. Jim mentioned that I currently have a service position that is as chair of the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't live in New York. I don't get paid to do anything. It's just a volunteer position that I stuck up my hand for. Apparently, my coffee making skills are so bad that my group wanted me to stick up my hand for some other things, and so this is just how that turned out. And it doesn't make me anyone special in AA. There were a few times early in AA I was pretty special, and I got drunk immediately after those times. So that was the last time I really wanted to be special. So my sobriety date is December 4, 1998, and the life that has come to me by virtue of doing just a little bit of work in Alcoholics Anonymous is amazingly different than the life I had when I got here. And it's funny because sometimes it doesn't look terribly different from the outside. I'm one of those alcoholics who does not come from an alcoholic home. I have absolutely wonderful parents who are two of the kindest people that I know, who look to give me all the opportunities anybody could want in life, and support and love and caring, and here I am. And I'm here because right from a young age, I had this feeling that I was somehow different. And that feeling of being different, that feeling of uniqueness, is really what alcoholism is for me, or at least how it showed up in my life. I don't have a lot of those dramatic stories that some people arrive in Alcoholics Anonymous with. I was speaking at a convention a few years ago, and the fellow that spoke on Friday night, he just had this wild story. It sort of ended with, he worked in an airport, and being an entrepreneurial sort, he started his own import business at the airport. And his story ended, or at least his drinking story, ended with the DEA kicking down his door with semi-automatic weapons. And that's not the story of my life. My life has no such drama. My kids didn't even bring a note home from the PTA. Like, it's just not that kind of drama. But what happened for me is I just got to a place where I couldn't live like that anymore. That feeling of being different through my whole life was met by me being successful a lot in my life. What I learned fairly early was being successful took away that feeling of not fitting in, or that feeling of being somehow an outsider. So I was an achiever. I was that kid that was always on the honor roll, on the dean's list, president of the class, valedictorian, captain of just about every sports team I played for. I played in a rock band. All of those things that represented success as a young person. And I know now that all I was really trying to do was to find some kind of material solution to what I now know to be a spiritual problem, because that material solution seemed to last about 8 minutes each time. And then I needed to go on and find something else. And I was socially successful as a young person, lots of friends, lots of girlfriends, but I still had this sense when I walked into a room that I didn't fit in there. And it wasn't that anybody said or did anything to make me feel like I didn't fit in. I was one of those alcoholics blessed with the ability to read other people's minds, and so I knew what those people were thinking. And what they were thinking was, why is he here? He doesn't fit in here. He doesn't belong here. God, I hope he doesn't come talk to me. He's kind of boring. And here's the magic of alcohol in my life once I discovered it. I could have those two, three, four drinks, and what you were thinking changed. And what you were thinking now was, oh, I'm so glad Scott's here. He's so interesting. He has such funny stories. I can hardly wait to talk to him. And in the beginning of my drinking, that was the effect of alcohol between the second drink and the 52nd drink. And over the course of my drinking career, that window where everything was good got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And you all know that it disappeared years before I quit drinking. But I didn't have any other solution. It was the only thing that had worked. And so I kept trying it. And it wasn't until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous that you told me that you had a lasting solution. And it turns out that's what I found. I said I didn't suffer a lot of the consequences of my drinking. I tended to, had a friend describe it as I tended to fall uphill, in my life. When I was in high school and I would go out with my friends the night before an exam, and we'd all get drunk and show up the next day for the exam feeling the effects of that, I'd get A's and they'd get D's. We'd go out drinking before a dance at high school, show up at the dance drunk. They'd get kicked out of school for showing up at the dance drunk, and they'd ask me to stand by the door and watch for people who might cause trouble. Like, it's just an endless series of events like that. I'd always wanted to be a lawyer. To be a lawyer, you have to write this exam called the LSAT. I didn't really study for it. I took a practice exam and was going home the night before the exam to do another practice exam just to kind of tune up. Somebody said, "Hey, you want to go for a beer?" And I said, "Yeah, sure. I can only go for a couple because I've got this exam tomorrow for this thing I've wanted to do all my life." And I didn't leave the bar till they shut it down at 2 a.m. Showed up at that exam feeling the effects of a night of drinking, and went home to figure out what I was going to do that didn't involve going to law school. And turns out I scored above the 98th percentile. It's just every time I should have suffered a consequence, I didn't. I never got divorced. I never lost a job. I never got an impaired driving charge. I never got thrown in the drunk tank. Never went to jail. Never been arrested. All of those consequences never happened in my life, not because I didn't deserve them, but because I was lucky and this clean-cut white kid, and I got away with things that other people didn't get away with. I say I didn't get an impaired driving charge, but one evening I'm driving home and driving a little fast in a residential neighborhood, and police pull me over, and I pull into this gas station parking lot not all that far from where I was living. And I'm driving this little 1979 MG midget convertible, and I got the top down, and underneath the dust cover just behind the seat, I got two half full 40 pounders of vodka. And the policeman's wagging his finger at me, telling me, you can't be driving that fast through the residential neighborhood. And he starts to kind of fluff around in the dust cover and is about to find these two half full bottles of vodka, when someone comes running out of the gas station shouting, "We've been robbed. We've been robbed." I don't know how often gas stations get robbed around where you live, but in the city I live in, it happens about once a year. It just happened to have been perfectly timed that year. And it's just that kind of luck, I think, that maybe prolonged my drinking. But the effects of my drinking were showing up. People at work were starting to talk to me about how much I drank, and so I started to do what we all do when people talk to us about our drinking, and that was to find a way to get away from them. cut them out of my life, and was making plans to go out and start my own law firm, and got organized to get some insurance. And my insurance guy phoned me back and said, you know, there's some sort of problem with your medical test. You're supposed to go see your doctor. So I go see my doctor, and my doctor says, you know, we got this one liver score. You know, it's supposed to be around 50. We consider 70 to be quite high. You are 768. You know, what I'd like you to do is go home, don't drink. He says, I don't know what's going on with your drinking, but go home and don't drink for 2 weeks and come back and see me. And you know what? I really meant to, but somehow I couldn't manage to not drink in those 2 weeks. And so I went back, and my medical tests were unchanged. And he looked at me and he said, I don't know what's going on with your drinking, but if it continues how it's going for another year, you're going to be dead. And I left his office, and I thought, ma, what do doctors know? Like, I mean, they're this far from throwing chicken bones out of a teacup. He never got any 98th percentile on the LSAT, and I just kind of ignored him and kept going. And you know, those guys at work kept the pressure up, and they had been exposed to some work done by members of Alcoholics Anonymous, who speak to professionals about our illness and the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution. And they reached out to this fellow who happened to be an alcoholic and happened to be involved in the Lawyers Assistance Program in BC. And this fellow came to see me. And he did something different than everybody else who'd ever come to talk to me about my drinking. He didn't talk to me about my drinking. He talked to me about his drinking. And I will say, I was not struck sober or even struck particularly impressed. You know, I listened to the fellow's story, and it sounded a little bit like he quit just when it got hard. And I wasn't the kind of guy who quit when things got hard, but he was really nice, and he stayed in touch with me. You know, and he did something that is, I think, profoundly important for us to do, whenever we're reaching out to somebody. And that's this: he stayed in touch, and he didn't make it impossible for me to reach back to him when I was ready. You know, he was gently persistent, but so gently persistent. He just stayed in touch. I had the sense that he cared. He didn't pressure me in any way. He didn't make it awkward for me to reach back to him when I did. And when I did, he put me in touch with a group of people who have been just a huge part of my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. And even then, as I started to come to meetings, I didn't get sober right away. When I came to the first four real meeting, because I'd been to a meeting once, you know, there'd been some pressure on, and I'd heard about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to a noon meeting, and I got there about, I don't know, 12:28, just to hear somebody finish talking. And then they were talking about collecting money for birthday parties. And I thought, I don't know how collecting money for birthday parties is going to help me. And I lasted about 5 minutes, and I left. When I came back for real the next first time, I was really surprised by what I heard. I heard people talking about the things that were going on in my life that I was never going to talk to anybody about. You know, they were talking about waking up on a Saturday morning and knowing they needed to go get groceries, but somehow it was impossible to go to Safeway or Walmart or wherever it was, sober. And I identified with that because I would wake up and think I have to go get groceries, and it was impossible to go, until I had three or four or five drinks. When I had those three or four or five drinks, I mean, everything was great. It was smooth. I was with my people. You know, like, I just had that sense of belonging in the world again. And they talked about how they drank before they went to a party so they didn't look like some kind of liquor pig at the party. They talked about making sure they had some in the trunk of their car so they didn't run out. They talked about things that were happening in my life regularly, where I would get to the end of my workday and I'd phone my wife or my mother or my mother-in-law and say, "I'll be there for dinner at 6:30." And when I phoned them, I meant it. I really meant it. But somehow 6:30 would come and tick right by, and my backside was good to that chair in that pub. Always for a really good reason. You know the reasons. My turn to buy, your turn to buy. They're about to show the lacrosse highlights on the sports channel. I never really played lacrosse, but I was pretty sure if I watched the highlights, I'd be able to pick up the game. And next time I got on a fitness kick, I'd be able to play lacrosse to get fit, pull my life back together. All of that really great thinking, right? And these people were saying these things out loud, and I really couldn't believe it. But it was the very first time that that sense of uniqueness, that sense of I'm the only one, I thought maybe I'm not the only one. I'd gone through so much of my life, as I said, thinking that I was the only one. I was broken in some way that other people weren't broken in. I didn't know how that way was, but I just knew it was really important that nobody find out, and that's why that success had to happen. I had to show how I wasn't broken. And here was this group of people who were talking openly about that. They were laughing about some of the horrible things that had happened in their lives. And I had a thought, wow, I wonder what it would be like be like that, to be able to say those things out loud, to be able to laugh at those things, because I was a long way from that. And I didn't get sober right away, because what happened for me was that I started to feel physically better really quickly. Being a fairly bright guy, not as bright as I think I am, but fairly bright, I thought I could figure this out. And so the combination of feeling strong, some of you may sponsor men who, when they say the words, "I'm feeling strong," they're headed for the door. I certainly do. And having this figured out meant that I was kind of a bit doomed. And I started to notice that some of those things that happened to a lot of those alcoholics never happened in my life. And I spoke about some of those a minute ago. No impaired driving charges, no drunk tank, no jail, lots of those consequences. And I thought, if I am an alcoholic, I must be like an especially mild case. And so I probably don't have to do all of these things that these people did. I mean, I thought I'd done them anyway. I'd read them from that blind on the wall, and I'd nodded and thought that was what doing the steps was agreeing with that stuff. And the result of all that was I got drunk again, and I was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous a little bit, and through a couple of treatment centers, and then to a detox center. And even though it was only 10 months from that first time I stuck up my hand and said I was new to the last time I stuck up my hand and said I was new, my life got worse. Not because any of those things happened, but because of how I felt about myself. I got to a place where no longer could I look at myself in the mirror in the morning. No longer could I stand the look that was in the eyes of my children and my wife and my parents. And we talk about bottoms in Alcoholics Anonymous, and sometimes people talk about bottoms as consequences. That's not what it was for me in terms of outside consequences. It was internal consequences. It was that look in the eyes of my wife, the look in the eyes of my kids. It was the incompatibility of the image I had of the person I was and the reality of the things I was doing. I think I'm a good son, but I live 5 blocks from my parents, and I mailed my mother's Mother's Day card late the last 4 years of my drinking. It doesn't sound like a big thing, but it's a big thing for me. I think I'm a good father, but I couldn't get off the couch on a hot summer day to take my kids the 5 blocks from my house to my parents' house so my kids could swim with their cousins in my parents' pool. I had this idea of the kind of person I was, and I had the things I was doing, and this gap is awfully painful. And for me, a bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous is feeling the pain of that gap. I just couldn't stand to live the way I was living anymore. The consequence of that was that I was back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened this time when I came back is this fellow came up to me and said, "Hi, Scott, we've been watching you. We got a group of guys. We're going to go through the steps together, and we'd like you to join us." And I responded with the kind of arrogance that I always respond to things with. And that was, "Thank you very much for the invitation to join your little step group. But I have this very busy, important life, and I really don't think I have time for that." And the fellow said, "Great, Dave will pick you up at 7:30. And those guys saved my life, because what I know now is that the person I was when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, even the last time, I was going to drink again, unless something changed. And what I know now is the only way things change, things being me, is through the steps. I have a way of not being able to see, reality. I think poorly, I perceive reality poorly. Just before I went to the first treatment center, I got this great idea that I was going to not drink at this family reunion I was going to, so that I didn't really cause a fuss. One of the problems, though, drinking the way I drank and stopping abruptly, is a person could have a withdrawal seizure. And that's exactly what happened for me at this family reunion, where I planned to not make a fuss. I leave the family reunion in an ambulance and travel 45 minutes back to the city I live in, because that's how I managed to not make a fuss. And I was invited through the course of the steps to look back through my life and see other problems with my thinking. And I'll tell you a couple of those stories and then get on to the real recovery part. But in between treatment centers, I got home one day, and I'll tell you, nobody gets hurt in this story. And where we used to live, in the city I live in, was along a river where the salmon migrate in the fall, and we'd get black bears that would come and eat the salmon, and then they would wander up into our yard and eat the fruit off the trees. And I come home one day, and this good-looking dog I'd bought, because I knew having a good-looking dog would help me stay sober, had treed this mama bear and these two cubs. And I phoned my wife and said, "It's not safe for you and the kids to come home." And I settled into my chair in my living room, to have some peaceful drinking, except that this dog is at the bottom of this tree where he's treed this mama bear and these two cubs, barking and barking and barking. And so it's not as peaceful as I imagined. So I go outside and I get the dog and bring the dog in, thinking the dog will stop barking and it will be more peaceful. Not quite how it worked out. Now the dog is inside barking at the bears. I'm smarter than dogs, so what I know I need to do is lower the blinds so the dog can't see the tree where the mama bear and the two cubs are. Apparently, I'm not that much smarter than dogs, because now the dog is just like this on the blinds, and I'm thinking about how much trouble I'm going to be in when she gets home, and the dog has thrashed the blinds, and I've let the dog thrash the blinds. So I need a better solution. So I come up with this plan. I pour myself a drink and go outside in my sock feet in October, and I go to my driveway, and I don't know if you can see this rock, but I pick up about six of these bad boys. Yes, it's about the size of my thumbnail. And I go around, and my plan is to stand at the bottom of this tree and throw these rocks up at this mama bear and annoy her enough that she comes down and takes her cubs away so my dog stops barking. Some of you may see some flaws in that plan. Here's the problem with my thinking, because this is the order in which those flaws occurred to me. I only brought one drink with me. That was the first flaw in the plan. The second was, these rocks are way too small to throw with any accuracy. So I go back inside to pour myself another drink before the third problem occurs to me, and that is that mama bears often, when they have cubs, do not peacefully go away when people are throwing rocks at them. And it's just an example of the kind of alcoholic thinking that pervaded my life. And I think that I got the world by the tail and I'm the smartest guy going. And I can't see any of that. And those guys that helped me through the steps helped me with that. They helped me to find an understanding of a higher power that allowed me to let go of the prejudices that I had. I won't tell that long story, but I had some real prejudices, and a sponsor had me write down three characteristics that this higher power would have to have for me to find this power acceptable in my life. And I wrote down three things and went to show him, and he said, "I'm not interested." He said, "I do not have to agree with, approve of, or even understand your conception of a higher power." And that was one of the things that finally got me past, and I don't mean to offend anybody's religious views, but got me past this idea that AA was somehow deeply connected to some kind of religion that I couldn't abide. And he helped me understand that it really was, a power of my own understanding, and they helped me through that fourth step and that fifth step to get a more realistic picture of the kind of person I was. And I could see just what I described earlier, that I had this idea of me and these things I was doing. And what they told me is I was getting a more realistic idea of the kind of person I was, and the kinds of things I was doing changed, and we narrowed that gap. And so I didn't have nearly as much pain in my life. And what I discovered in going through that process is that part of the reason I drank is I could only stand being around me for so long before I needed some relief from being around someone like me. And unless the person I was changed, I was going to drink again. And I will say my thinking has improved. I'm going to say it's not exactly a straight line. I'll tell this one more story and then get on to some probably more interesting things. I was about 2 years sober, and I don't mean to offend anybody who's 2 years sober, but when I was 2 years sober, I was a spiritual giant. The kind of spiritual giant who can't figure out why people can't get this, like just really, really full of me. And my wife and I were having this particular difficulty in our house, and she couldn't get the top on the orange juice when she put it back in the fridge. And when I would take the orange juice out and shake it, the top would come off, and orange juice would go everywhere. And I berated her, and being a spiritual giant, I demonstrated the whole exercise of putting the top on the orange juice. And of course, the only result of that was I was invited to sleep on the couch for a few nights. But this kept happening. After a couple of weeks, I finally relented and did what many of us do after struggling on our own with a problem for a couple of weeks, is I phoned my sponsor, and I said, "Larry, I've got this problem and I really don't know what to do." And I explained the whole thing to him, and he said, "Oh, Scott, I'm so glad you phoned me. I know exactly what you can do to resolve this." I said, "Oh, thank goodness." And he says, "When you take the orange juice out of the fridge, before you shake it, tighten the lid yourself." And I swear to God, that never would have occurred to me, because the way I'm built is the problem is never here. The problem is always there, right? And it's just by continuing to come around Alcoholics Anonymous, and listen to your stories and watch how you do this work, that I've come to understand what you told me right from the beginning, and that is that the good news is the problem is always here. I'm the kind of person, though, who has had to have some opportunities to discover that from some slightly different angles. And being involved in service in Alcoholics Anonymous is one of those. One of the things that seems to happen for me over the course of any period of time in Alcoholics Anonymous is that my thinking begins slowly and in a fairly disguised way to revert back to my specialness and how they're, I really don't seem to be getting my fair share. Kind of, if all there is, if it is this all there is, kind of approaches, and it happened fairly early on in sobriety. I got to this place where I'm going to lots of meetings. I'm feeling better. I'm back sleeping in the big bed. People at work are off my case. I'm repairing relationships. I'm still continuing through the steps and making these amends with the people that are important in my life. And but I'm starting to feel a certain sameness in my life. There's a routineness that is starting to feel kind of numbing. I'm going to meetings and they read the same things and they drone on, and I go to a meeting at noon. I go back to work, I go home, I get kids sorted out, I go to a meeting in the evening, go to bed, get up, go to work, go to a meeting, go back to work, go. And it's this sameness. And I start to wonder, is this all there is? Which I now know is code for me, at least, to be what's in it for me. And if you're someone as special as me with my special gifts and talents, the answer to what's in it for me is always going to be not nearly enough. And so I was fortunate. This fellow said, "You know what? You went through that step group with that group of guys. Why don't you and I start this step group? We'll do it together this 1 year, and then you can do it on your own or with somebody else over the next while." And I started that, and over the next 15 years or so, did that every single year. And every time that started, what happened was I started to think about me a little bit less and these other people a little bit more. And it happened when my sponsor told me it was time for me to be a greeter at my home group. And I told him, I really wasn't very comfortable doing that. And he explained to me that I should just go stand by the door and do it. And I did. And I wasn't there a couple of weeks until the door opened and this guy looked in. And he looked like I felt. And he closed the door again. And I opened the door and I stuck out my hand and said, "Hi, I'm Scott. Welcome to the acceptance group." And I have no idea who that guy is. I have no idea if he ever got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I know the feeling I had right in that instant. And it was this: my problems were gone for just an instant when I stuck out my hand. And that continues through my sobriety. I was invited to start to take a panel into our local detox and talk to them about Alcoholics Anonymous and who we are and what we do. And I do that to this day. I got talked into letting my name stand as alternate district committee member in my district. And I didn't know what that was, and I asked somebody what that was. They came and said, "Scott, we need an alternate DCM in our district." And I said, "What is that?" And they said, "Well, it's this." And I started to explain how I had this really busy, important life, like I did with those guys in the steps. And they said, "Well, you're just the alternate. It really won't take any time at all." And so it's hard for me to say no to that. So I go and I tell them at the district meeting what I've been doing in service, and they have a vote, and I'm elected the alternate DCM. And don't you know, about a month later, the DCM resigns because he's got to have kidney dialysis. And I find I'm on my way to one of these weekend events that's, all of Friday night, like 14 hours on Saturday, and another 4 or 5 hours on Sunday morning, called a service assembly. And so I'm on my way to a pre-conference assembly, and it's about an 8-hour drive from where I live to where this thing is. And we're going in my vehicle, and I got these two old-time service guys who go to all of these things, and they can't shut up about service. And they talk for 8 hours in my vehicle about this, and they've arranged the hotel, and we pull up in front of the Bates Motel. Not literally, it was named after the town, but it may as well have been named the Bates Motel. You know, it's got beds that go like this. It's April, it's pretty cool. One guy's got to sleep with the window open, the other guy's got to sleep with a TV at about half volume. Wakes up in the middle of the night from some sort of Vietnam War dream, screaming. And I'm thinking, oh, this is just perfect. Like, Scott, how do you get into these things? You just have to learn to sit on your hands. Like, don't stick up your hand when somebody asks for volunteers for something. But I tell you, I get to that event and I'm watching this woman on the dais. And there's another person at the floor mic, and they're just like this. And this woman at the dais is just, she has the most pleasant smile on her face, and nothing that seems to be going on there is about her. She doesn't seem to have to be right about anything. And I thought, I wonder what it would be like to be like that. Because if you saw my fourth step inventory, there was a whole lot of Scott needing to be right, Scott can't be wrong in it. And so I was attracted to that. And what I found there was a group of people who were far more interested to do the right thing than to be right. And I could learn something about getting along with other people here. And I began in that setting to have an experience with the traditions that I didn't get in regular AA meetings. I began to see them at work. I began to see that the traditions were all about me learning how to get along with other people, which I needed to learn. When you're as selfish and self-centered as me, and all you ever think about is me, the way I am, I need a place where I can learn how to get along with other people. And that's what I learned there. And it was a great place to learn because I would make mistakes and people would gently correct me. They would not invite me to sleep on the couch for 3 or 4 nights, which was my experience at home when I made those same mistakes, right? And I stuck around there, and I had a chance to serve in a couple of capacities. And I had the experience of putting my name up for election and not being elected. And understanding that being of service in Alcoholics Anonymous is always just about making an offer. I'm prepared to help if you need it. And sometimes people take up that offer of help, and sometimes they don't. And I had a chance to serve as a delegate to our General Service Conference from our area. And I know Chuck has had the same experience, and it's really quite life-changing, for the experience as much as for anything that actually gets done, in terms of what's on the agenda at the General Service Conference. And I had a chance to serve in a role that was called Trustee at Large Canada. And so I served on the General Service Board before this current stint, for 4 years, from 2015 to 2019. And the role of a trustee at large, in addition to sort of all of the usual trustee responsibilities, where we sit on trustee committees, we go to General Service Board weekends, we show up at regional forums and other events like that. Part of the role of the trustee at large was, almost like being an ambassador for AA in the US-Canada structure. When other structures wanted somebody to come to an event, that's who was invited. But my very first experience with that was at the International Convention in Atlanta. And I was a trustee at large for about 2 minutes. And I'm at the International Convention. I haven't met the other trustees, I haven't had any orientation, nothing. And I've been told that I'm supposed to chair this meeting called AA Around the World. And I've probably explained that I'm quite clever. Being quite clever, I figured out what AA around the world was. It was a call-up meeting where I was supposed to call up people from around the world, but I didn't know anybody from around the world. So I figure I'm going to ruin AA because the whole international convention has turned into something about me now. And I'm headed to chair this meeting, and I'm going down this escalator. And for those of you who were there, you know that there were two parallel escalators, and I'm watching this guy on the other escalator, and he's got this map of the venue, and he's doing one of these. So that's the international signal for I'm lost, I think. And so I've been lost in the center, and I say to him, "Can I help you find something?" And he says, "I'm looking for this meeting AA around the world. It's in this room B, whatever it is." And I said, "Well, I happen to be going there. If you meet me at the bottom of the escalator," because he's a couple ahead of me, you can walk with me and we'll go there." And I'm about to go back to thinking about me when he says, "I sure hope they ask my friend Marshall from Uganda to share at this meeting." I said, "Really? Does your friend Marshall speak English?" He says, "Oh, he speaks English, and he's got just a great story." And that's just yet another example of what this power does in my life. When I stop thinking about me for just a moment, and I give enough room for this power to be at work in my life, my problems are removed. And so I get to this meeting, unless you think that I'm entirely spiritual, I start the meeting and say, "Would my friend Marshall from Uganda like to come up and share?" And he comes up and he starts to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous in Uganda. And he talks about how Uganda is a country of about 35 million people, roughly the same size as Canada. He says there are 70 sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous in Uganda. We have four meetings. Uganda has the highest per capita consumption of alcohol of any country in the world, according to the World Health Organization. And it occurs to me, what if we could help them? And that's exactly what we do as a collective. That's exactly what we do through our service structure in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's exactly what we do when our groups send money to the General Service Board. That green card that gets read at so many AA meetings, where it talks about it's the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites us all around the world. That's exactly what they're talking about. They're talking about reaching out and helping people like my friend Marshall and other people in Uganda. And I had way more stories about being a trustee at large. But the bell has gone off. Thank you very much.